Hello, welcome to our program on careers. I'm a volunteer reader, Irene Lubin, welcoming you to our program today on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I would like to begin today's program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 4th of April. The title of this article is Hiring Posts Big Surprise Rebound in March. Unemployment rate declined to 4.3%. Gains are attributed to the healthcare sector. This article was written for the journal by Matt Grossman. The U.S. added 170,000 jobs in March, the Labor Department recently said, a resilient rebound that blew past expectations and defied concerns about a possible downturn. March's job gains marked the best month for growth in more than a year now, and were far better than February, when the U.S. lost more than 130,000 jobs. Last month's numbers also beat the gain of 59,000 jobs that economists polled by the Wall Street Journal had expected to see. The unemployment rate fell to 4.3% from February's 4.4%. The decline in the unemployment rate came with an asterisk. The labor force shrank by nearly 400,000 people, meaning fewer people were counted as unemployed. The share of people working or looking for work slipped to 61.9%, its lowest level since the fall of 2021. We should all be rooting for a higher participation rate, said Henry McVeigh, who is head of global macro and asset allocation at private equity firm KKR. You're in a solid but not spectacular growth environment. Investors took the latest job numbers in stride, in part because many markets, including stocks in the U.S. and Europe, were closed for Good Friday. Treasury yields edged higher as the healthier labor report was viewed as more likely to spur inflation and less likely to convince the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates. The benchmark 10-year Treasury yield ended the day slightly above 4.34%, up from 4.31% on Thursday. The February jobs number, meanwhile, was worse than previously reported. The Labor Department said that the economy lost 133,000 jobs in February alone, after previously estimating a loss of 92,000 jobs. I always tell people to look not just at the latest month, but to ask what's been the picture of the past 3 or 4 months, said Gus Foucher, who is chief economist at PNC Financial Services. When you look at the broader picture, we're adding jobs at a slower pace than a couple of years ago, but we are adding jobs, and it's enough to keep the unemployment rate steady. All told, the economy has created an average of 13,000 jobs each month over the past half year. That's a big downshift from the same period a year earlier, when the U.S. was adding 78,000 jobs on average each month. We have lost jobs in 5 of the past 12 months. The job gains were driven by a big rebound for the healthcare and social assistance sector. It added about 90,000 jobs in March alone. That was a reversal from February, when a large West Coast strike sidelined tens of thousands of workers. The rebound in jobs also looked as if it reflected an improvement in the weather from February, noted Jefferies economist Thomas Simons, that helped the leisure and hospitality and construction sectors. Leisure and hospitality added 44,000 jobs, and construction added 26,000. Manufacturing employment rose by 15,000. One of the few weak spots was the public sector. Federal government payrolls lost 18,000 jobs, more than offsetting net hiring by local agencies. Hiring has weathered a complicated set of cross currents over the past year. Job growth has downshifted, but Friday's data confirmed that the labor market has not been derailed. Last year alone, uncertainty about big changes to trade, immigration, and tax policies put many companies into hold-steady mode, delaying big hiring and layoff decisions until the picture becomes clearer. At the same time, the Trump administration's immigration crackdown has reduced the number of available workers, and so the economy no longer needs to add as many jobs to keep the same share of workers employed. It sounds like we're playing with numbers here. The war in Iran means the economy is now facing a new set of challenges, and most economists think that the March jobs data arrived too early to see the effects. The sharp rise in oil prices raises costs and could yield more inflation, but it also could strain household budgets and track down demand. Because hiring plans are often made months in advance, the March numbers probably do not give a very clear read on how those effects are going to play out. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said this past week that the Iran war raises the risk that the central bank might have to choose between fighting inflation and shoring up the labor market, but that it is not facing that trade-off quite yet. Friday's data rammed that point home. The Fed was already planning to hold rates steady at its coming April 28th to 29th meeting because elevated oil prices and underlying inflation around 3% had closed the door to cuts regardless. But the March jobs data relieved officials of the harder question looming behind that decision, whether a weakening labor market would eventually force them to consider cutting even with inflation uncomfortably high. The next article is a related article also published in the Wall Street Journal the 4th of April. This article was written by Justin Lehart and Danny Doherty, and the title is Healthcare Continues to Drive U.S. Job Gains. Nicer weather and a big healthcare rebound powered a surprising March jobs report. The economy did net that 178,000 jobs in March, a sharp turnaround after losing 133,000 just a month before. The bulk of those job gains were in just a handful of sectors. Healthcare and social assistance did lead the way, bolstered by the end of a hospital strike that sidelined tens of thousands of workers. Leisure and hospitality, construction and transportation, and warehousing also registered gains. On the downside, the Federal Reserve workforce continued to shrink, and financial services employment declined. The information sector, which includes a number of tech-related industries, still shed jobs. Snowstorms and frigid temperatures in part of the country likely weighed on employment in February, with the leisure and hospitality and the construction sectors losing a combined 24,000 jobs. Last month, they snapped back during a milder March, adding 70,000 jobs. Stepping back, the labor market in many ways has narrowed to a single engine. Since the end of 2024, healthcare and social assistance have added about 855,000 jobs. The rest of the private sector has lost 322,000 jobs. Meanwhile, the effects of the Trump administration's push to shrink the federal workforce continue to be felt. Even though workers who took the deferred resignation plan put in place early last year have already left, the federal workforce continued to decline. There are now 352,000 fewer federal government jobs than there were in January of last year. One of the more troubling signals in Friday's report did come from a decline in the labor force participation rate, the share of the working age population that is either working or looking for work. A sliding participation rate can signal more people giving up on the job hunt, on the hunt for work. The rate did slip to 61.9%, marking its lowest level since late 2021 and well below where it was before the pandemic. The decline in the unemployment rate to 4.3% from 4.14% in February came about largely because fewer people were out there looking for work. The overall decline in participation is less alarming, though, when you focus on the people ages 25 to 54 who are less likely to be in school or retired. This prime age group's participation rate has held near multi-decade highs, evidence that the overall decline in participation is being driven by an aging population cycling out of the workforce rather than discouraged workers giving up. The aging population will likely continue to hit the labor market in the months to come, especially with far fewer people coming into the country as a result of the Trump administration's heavy immigration restrictions. The shrinking supply of workers is reflected in dwindling jobs growth. The United States has added an average of 21,000 jobs each month since the start of 2025, an annual pace of just 0.2%. That is a big drop from the period running from 1980 to 2007, when the baby boomers were in their prime working ages and employment grew by 1.5% annually. The next article that I would like to read for you today comes from the Wall Street Journal, the 31st of March. There is more work and no perks, but at least the vibes are bad. This article was written for the journal by Mark Maurer and Chip Cutter. Workers say cost cuts and artificial intelligence are stripping the joy out of office life. Feels like a funeral. For employees at a Dell Technologies office, mornings used to start with a tiny dose of joy. The office coffee machines doled out free daily espresso shots, a small perk that workers relished. And then came the buzzkill. Last year, the company started charging staffers a fee every time they used the machine. The cost, while small, felt like what one worker described as the cherry on the top of a demoralizing work culture beset by layoffs and overwhelming workloads. Honestly, it feels like a funeral in the office right now, said the employee, who pointed out that the coffee was just okay. Dell said it committed to supporting the well-being of its workforce. The coffee squeeze is emblematic of a broader malaise sweeping office life at American companies these days, which appear to be in a race to find inefficiencies and cut costs. The curtailing of perks from offsites to travel is happening against the backdrop of an artificial intelligence push that employees say seems aimed at squeezing more work out of fewer people. The upshot, many employees are saying, is that work has been stripped of fun. There's almost nobody around who is feeling positive vibes about their job right now, said Rocco Saboth, who is a longtime software marketer outside of Seattle. We're in the AI dread era. Saboth, who is 45, said that when he started his career, the technology industry still offered plenty to excite him. Companies were growing and bosses were lavishing ever higher pay and perks. As his career took him from startups to larger companies such as Amazon, Saboth had a realization: work was rather miserable. Everyone I talk to is consumed by AI, either how to use it, how to pretend to use it, or how much they hate using it, how it's going to eliminate their position or their company's product, he said. Middle managers say they're on the front lines of the war on fun. Once used to overseeing a handful of people, they now have far bigger teams. The average manager had roughly 12 direct reports last year, according to Gallup, a nearly 50% jump from when the firm first measured the figure in 2013. AI has changed expectations about productivity, too. Once reliable career paths from business school to consulting, for example, now look shakier. All the conveyor belts are broken, said Susie Welch, a management professor at New York University's Stern School of Business, at a recent symposium on purpose and flourishing. Companies are tightening scrutiny of employee expenses also, meaning certain niceties are also disappearing. At banking software company Q2 Holdings in Austin, finance chief Jonathan Price told employees the company was taking aim at non-essential expenses that were too often wasteful, part of a larger effort to control costs. The company placed a $100 cap on a single wine bottle purchase when entertaining clients, in part because employees were spending far more. Non-essential expenses fell by over 25% in February compared with a year earlier, he said. Chief financial officers at large U.S. companies mentioned efficiency at least once on 307 conference calls in the latest quarter as of March 26th, up from 219 a year earlier and the highest level since at least 2020, according to AlphaSense. Executives say it's a delicate balance engaging what perks, if any, to eliminate. Trimming the wine budget is one thing. Touching the office snacks, such as bananas or Kind bars, can be a no-go. You can cut too far or make people feel less valued in the workplace and they'll just go work for the competition, said Ken Bowles, CFO of packaging giant Smurfit Westrock. Smurfit Westrock has been scrutinizing certain expenses following a 2024 merger and said it surpassed its goal of $400 million in cost savings in its first full year after the deal. The company said it asks employees to be sensible. If someone is entertaining a customer and orders a nicer bottle of wine, that's probably okay in the context of the relationship, Bowles said. But if he's taking out the GM of a plant or controller and they've gone off and ordered champagne for everybody, then you go, oh, look, that's a conversation. Bowles said in offices where the company struggled to retain workers post-merger, it added perks like refreshment fridges with soft drinks, sparkling water, and healthy snacks such as fruit and cheese. People do use them, Bowles said. Some companies stepped up perks like better coffee and food to encourage people to return to the office following the pandemic. But they have since swung back, said Bruce Daisley, who is a former executive at Twitter and YouTube, who advises corporate leaders on culture. Culture always outperforms every other variable in terms of what we want from the job, Daisley said. We typically join the job for pay, and we leave because the culture's bad. Saboth, the technology employee, left his job at the software company Tango last year, and now he regularly hears from former colleagues at a range of companies who are miserable. He now says he is retired from corporate life, freeing him to pursue new interests like building a pool. The next article that I'd like to read for you today also appeared in the March 31st issue of the Wall Street Journal. The title of this is, Are Bots Replacing Workers? These skeptics are not so sure. And this article was written for the journal by Callum Borchers. It's trendy to cite artificial intelligence when cutting jobs, but the reality is more complicated. U.S. employers laid off more than 1.2 million workers in 2025, estimates are showing. Peter Bell is the founder of Gather.dev, a professional network for chief technology officers who use AI agents in place of people for certain roles at his startup. But he has gone so far as giving these agents names and concocting personal backstories for them. He seeks advice from an artificial intelligence life coach he calls Kira. You'd have a hard time finding a stronger believer in artificial intelligence's potential. But even Bell contends that many business leaders today are exaggerating the technology's role in layoffs, a practice that is becoming to be known as AI washing. It's a wonderful way of looking like a genius when job cuts are something you might have to do for operational reasons, Bell says. It's great smoke cover-up if you need to goose your bottom line. He isn't alone in such a skeptical take. Leaders at Amazon.com, Block, Atlassian, and other companies as well have linked recent layoffs to artificial intelligence. But economists and machine learning specialists say existing technology is not ready yet to take humans' jobs at scale. They argue the most likely reasons for headcount reductions remain the same as ever: slower sales, shifting priorities, and previous overhiring. Artificial intelligence washing is pervasive right now, says J.P. Gounder, vice president and principal analyst at Forrester Research. It sounds so much better to say we're laying off people because we're so good at AI and we're creating all these efficiencies. That sounds so much more rational and innovative. U.S. employers laid off more than 1.2 million workers in 2025 alone, according to Challenger Gray & Christmas, a firm that advises companies on staff reductions and helps departing employees find new work. Forrester estimates that fewer than 100,000 of those job losses were primarily attributable to AI productivity gains or cost savings. Citing AI when downsizing can make a company seem ahead of the curve and boost its stock value. Investors like the idea of a business using technology to run leaner. Gounder says he speaks regularly with managers who tell him that artificial intelligence tools need more time to prove their capabilities. Often there are cybersecurity and regulatory compliance hurdles to clear before a bot can take over a person's tasks. Forrester projects 6.1% of Americans' jobs could be lost to AI by 2030, as these issues are resolved. That's bad, but not an apocalypse, as Gounder puts it. And a more modest displacement tomorrow is different from widespread replacement today. The idea that artificial intelligence is already gobbling up lots of jobs seems believable because it feels like a suspicion confirmed. Recall that business leaders spent years telling us that AI would assist human workers, not supplant them. Around this time last year, they started sending a more ominous message. We will need fewer people doing some of the jobs that are being done today, Amazon chief executive Andy Jassy wrote in a memo last spring. Anthropic CEO Dario Amodal predicted that half of all entry-level jobs could disappear in 1 to 5 years. Ford Motor CEO Jim Farley went further. Artificial intelligence is going to replace literally half of all white-collar workers in the U.S. The truth comes out, we thought. Our robot overlords are here and resistance is futile. But if we were naive to believe executives when they initially said AI would merely help us, then perhaps we ought to be skeptical of their new job killer narrative, too. Glassdoor chief economist Daniel Zhu is. It actually is pretty hard to see evidence of AI impacting the labor market at the macro level, he says. If you listen to what CEOs say about why they're doing layoffs, sure, some of them are attributing it to artificial intelligence. How much we should believe them, that I'm less certain about. Companies have many incentives to pin staff reductions on AI. It can be a form of product marketing for those that develop and sell AI tools. For managers handing out pink slips, technology offers a ready-made breakup line. It's not you, it's AI. More broadly, businesses are reclaiming the upper hand in the employer-employee relationship after a period of worker empowerment. Using an AI boogeyman to shake up people is consistent with that effort. None of this is to say that a major reckoning won't come at some point, or that AI hasn't already absorbed some positions. There can be sound logic behind eliminating jobs before AI is ready to fill the void, adds Gather.dev's Bell. Necessity is the mother of invention, though, as the saying goes. So forcing a team to play shorthanded could compel remaining employees to find productivity hacks faster than they otherwise would have. Cutting on a prayer can also backfire. Customer services roles are ostensibly among the most vulnerable to AI. But organizations are rushing to reduce headcount before they're actually seeing the gains from their AI investments, says Kathy Ross, who is vice president at business research firm Gartner. Gartner is predicting that half of the companies that replace humans with bots in these positions will wind up rehiring people by next year. This is partly because enterprise artificial intelligence tools and the engineers who manage them can be more expensive than the folks who answer the phones. Plus, customers tend to get cranky when it's impossible to speak to a person. It's clear by now that artificial intelligence is not just a helpful partner that eliminates busy work and lets us focus on the best parts of our jobs, but it's also not a broad replacement for human workers, not yet anyway, and companies' claims of artificial intelligence labor breakthroughs deserve scrutiny. And next up, is the promise of a degree broken? Graduates' anger goes far beyond the recent rise of unemployment and the looming threat of artificial intelligence. I'm going to look at this in an article that we'll read next week on our program. This does bring us to the end of the time that we have for our program on careers for today, however. Thank you for listening in, and I hope that you will all enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.